There may be no poet more integral to the American identity or more widely known among Americans than Robert Frost. Yet his life, the extent of his influence, are unfamiliar or misunderstood by many. In the new book, Love and Need, The Life of Robert Frost's Poetry, Adam Plunkett challenges previous biographers' interpretations of Frost's life and work, breaking away from what he sees as cliches to construct an original portrait of the poet and a novel analysis of his poems. Adam Plunkett is a literary critic who has received fellowship support from organizations such as the National Endowment of the Humanities and the Leon Levy Center for Biography. The new book is Love and Need, The Life of Robert Frost's Poetry, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Adam Plunkett to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
What brought you to the subject of wanting to look at the life of Robert Frost through this lens?
Well, I was reviewing books at the time, and the first volume of Robert Frost's letters in the great multi-volume edition by Harvard came out. And, you know, I was going through that along with other things and thought, oh, this is interesting. You know, I wrote quite a bit about poetry, and I thought that I had a pretty good understanding of Frost. And then one day, as I was just sitting in my cubicle, I realized that I really had no handle on Frost whatsoever. And so I thought, there's a lot here. And I started writing about him, and I realized that the more I wrote, the less I thought I knew. So I took it from there.
What is it in originally did you think that you didn't understand about Robert Frost?
There's a poem that has always meant a lot to me, Into My Own, which starts his first book of poetry, A Boy's Will. And it's meant a lot to me ever since I was 15 years old. And my dad gave me his copy of Frost's Complete Poems that he got when he turned 15 years old. And the poem, when I saw it then, seemed very straightforward. And then it occurred to me that the poem, it really isn't so straightforward in what it's saying, but also that it's not trying to dismiss the thing that it seems to be saying at first blush. And then I realized that there was this conflict in Frost's best poems between this very intuitive sense of what they were and these much deeper layers, and that part of Frost's genius was not just the depths and not just the surfaces, but a kind of relationship between those surfaces and depths, which I think is also a picture of how we all live. And I realized that I didn't have the aesthetic language to understand that. And I didn't understand how Frost came about that and how he came to write poems that way. And so I went off in search of it.
So how does one attain that knowledge to be able to decipher what it was you were looking to decipher?
It's a great question, and it took me many years to try to come up with my answer of it. And I think that in my case, at least my best stab at that kind of knowledge is a very long immersion in all of Frost's writings and the history around him, and also a very long immersion in the things that I could tell from Frost's own writing that had meant a lot to him. And it helped me to understand where Frost was original, to see what he was working with and how he was departing from the traditions that he received.
And this book is beautiful because it is certainly a biography, but it is more than that. I guess, did you always know that that was what it was going to be, of something that was more, that it was going to include this immersion?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. That's very, very kind of you to say, and I really appreciate it. In answer to your question, you know, what's really funny, I started as a critic and, you know, a book reviewer for magazines, websites, that sort of thing. And I really kind of condescended to biography. when I started out writing in it. I mean, I just thought, these are facts. What can be so hard about that? Well, it turns out it's very hard. And it's a kind of micro history, and it involves trying to not only go through so much material to get a kind of exactness, but also really being live to different interpretations of things that, in a lot of cases, just are not the kind of evidence that you hope for. And this is a roundabout way to getting to your question, but I think that the form of the book really kind of clarified itself to me the more I took the problems of biography writing seriously. And I realized that there was a kind of rhyme between the kinds of ambiguities that were there in Making Sense of Frost's Life and that were there in the poetry. And that really, when you look at the poetry at a sort of different plane of what Frost would call a different plane of regard, and just say in different terms, at different levels of privacy, that he was really asking similar questions of himself and of the world that he's asking in his poems, and that we ask of ourselves and of the world when we read the poems. And that there was a way, if I were able to tell the story the right way and look at the material most carefully, that I could really put readers into that conversation.
Adam Plunkett is our guest. The name of the new book is Love and Need, The Life of Robert Frost's Poetry. Given that hesitancy toward biography, how many were you reading many biographies of Frost prior?
Yes, absolutely.
And what do you feel that they missed about their subject?
I should start by saying, I suppose, that I feel a great debt to biographers who've done the work ahead of time. And another way my perspective changed as I worked on this was that I kind of had this both a young person's arrogance and also a kind of arrogance of someone who had never really tried to do this kind of work with a subject. Toward the material. And I look at these biographies, with the exception of Bill Pritchard's revisionist 1984 biography, that was always a real standout for me. Get these other biographies and just think, well, these are really bad criticism and they're kind of flat. I quite like different ones of them in their parts, but I just felt that there was this big gap that they didn't really make the poetry come alive for me as I read them. And the more I try to do it myself, I realized that Frost is an extraordinarily, even an excruciatingly difficult subject for this sort of thing. And I came to appreciate the whole biographical tradition much more than I thought I had. And I had a choice in writing this of whether to try to do another, big, definitive, encyclopedic version of it to try to supplant the Lawrence Thompson biography, the canonical one that exists in three volumes and had the kind of access to Frost that none of us will ever have because we didn't get to know him. But I realized, I think that the in part because my concern so much is the poetry, and it a biography like Jay Perini's, for instance, is I think quite good. It tries to do all in a kind of short space of time and isn't really able to kind of stretch its legs in discussing the poems to the same extent. And I realized that I could tell the story of that biography and then try to show ways in which, I think that it had missed the mark. I'm referring to Thompson's, not Perini's.
Right.
And also have the flexibility to be able to get as deep into the poems that I thought they really needed in order to be able to see them.
The word that is so often used in regards to Robert Frost is mercurial, both in life and in his work. How do you come down on that, and what, because it seems that you wrestle with that a bit.
Absolutely. His temper was certainly mercurial, and I would say his temperament was as well. It seems fair about his writing. I'm not sure I'd use it. I don't necessarily object. I think that my pause is that there's so many emotional layers in a good poem of Frost's that, it And there's so much measure and craft and artfulness that goes into it that it's more of an emotional rainbow than a kind of emotional seesaw in the way that one might infer from a word like mercurial. And it makes me think that, part of the art of Frost was in kind of giving some measure to his own temper and temperament, so that I'd probably be more reluctant to say it of the art, just by implication. I don't think it's wrong necessarily, but it probably wouldn't be my first choice.
When you look at the body of work, and I guess you begin, I mean that's sort of immersing yourself in the work. And as you start to, once you've done that and you start to work yourself immerse yourself into the wife, are you immediately struck by contradiction?
I really like that question. Yes, I think so. I mean, gosh, there's so many ways of getting at that. I think one way that I think is very salient is that there's this image of Frost that lives in the popular imagination of somebody who is, as a person, just very much not what he affects to be as he presents himself. There's the sense that this is a very tricky, very sophisticated, and very artful craftsman who affects a kind of rusticity and plain spokenness. And I think that jumps out at you pretty quickly as you get into some of the things written about him. And one thing I hope that my book does is temper that image a little bit. I mean, I think it's not really accurate. One thing you see is that Frost, his childhood is this jumble of contradictions. He has this extraordinary education under really difficult circumstances. He has a very uncertain class position, but he really is, as a youth, much more of a classical scholar than a scholar of English literature. And he really comes to understand writing through these very, very gifted and erudite translations of the classics. And he wins himself a kind of clarity of speech that is itself a great achievement of art on the very terms of classicism that Horace would have approved of. Horace did approve of the art that hides art. And I think you see that consistently throughout Frost. And I would say also that so much of what I think the book is trying to do is to locate the apparent contradiction and realize that there are some fundamental conflicts at play in what apparently looks just like plain inconsistency or contradiction.
I remember the first time I've been here a long time living in this region and had been to Frost's grave in Bennington.
It's incredible.
And it is incredible. But I recently I teach over at Bennington College, and I now go there fairly regularly to the gravesite. But that line of "I had a lover's quarrel with the world," I mean, I kept on thinking of that as I was reading the book, because that really does say so much about him, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It's extraordinary. I think it goes with one of the great poetic epitaphs writers ever written for themselves. That would have been another encapsulation of the book had I not already had Love and Need.
Right. But it is fascinating, because it also is, I think it may, and you can certainly call me on this, but I think it may surprise people who are casual readers of Frost that he felt that way.
I certainly agree with you. I mean, I think that, and I think that's actually, not only do I not disagree, I think it's extremely well put. I mean, I think that the thing that I really mean to get across in the book is that Frost was somebody who was, he was so painfully sensitive in both senses of that word, sensitive to things, sensitive about things. And in his writing, there is this exquisite sensitivity to the world that really is one of the many things that comes across in the epitaph, "I had a lover's quarrel with the world." And there's this the sense in some of the lines of the layers of subtext and feeling beyond something that feels so plain that It's the more you can hear it, the less I think you can get over it. Take something like the pasture. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring, and it's you hear that poem enough. I mean, I often when I'm talking about frost with people, we'll just start with that and kind of go over it slowly. That's the poem that after he started collecting different collections together, he put as the introduction to the whole work. It's this very short poem. It's 8 lines. It's all very plain, but the level of feeling and I would even say tenderness in that, combined with a kind of sense of protection of not letting the tenderness go into a kind of icky, sticky mushiness, is there's a kind of beauty in that that I think you do see in other artists, but rarely in any other artist so consistently. And that is very much there in his life as well as the art.
There is so much about the geography, right, as well, that
Absolutely.
he seems to encapsulate many of the real or not the the views of that others would have about being a Vermonter, of being a New Englander, of being a wanderer within that section of the world.
It's absolutely true. And I think that New Hampshire, the poem, gets at this, I think, very beautifully. It's not a good poem in many ways, but there's this sense throughout the whole thing that it can't quite take itself seriously. And it sort of knows that this aspect of regionalism is to some extent imagined and imaginary, but it also takes itself very seriously as an attitude toward the world. And that I think Frost held, not entirely consistently throughout his life, but the sense that this is something real, even if it is something that one has to sort of buy into. And also that, and this is something that Frost was less consistent about later in his career, but that often corresponds to, is correlated with geography, but doesn't depend on geography, that he would call himself not a regionalist, but a realmist. So this is a realm of emotion and feeling and identity, and something that one could theoretically get to by other ways, but also happens to inhere in one pocket of civilization.
You mentioned Lawrence Thompson's biography, and the New York Times' Helen Venler reviewed that and called Frost a monster of egotism, a self-protective man leaving behind him a wake of destroyed human lives. Does that it as you are now have concluded this work and this look, does that matter when it comes to what he has left as a body of work?
I think that it matters not in the sense that his not to the extent that those, what the kind of moral accounting of his life, I think, matters in a straightforward way to understanding the work, but I think it matters very deeply insofar as it gives us an image and a kind of intuitive sense of who the person is behind the art and what the kind of motives behind it were. And I think that, as I try to show in the book, it's less that the monster myth, that I think, is damaging, less because it gives a sense of Frost as somebody who's very bad, but because the kind of badness it gives the impression of is not, in some sense, morally or otherwise intuitively compelling or interesting. And I think that one gets to a sense of monstrosity by a sense of lurid fascination with what's basically abnormal psychology. And I think that one is really able to appreciate the kinds of conflicts that are there underneath the poems when one is able to imagine oneself into a very sensitive and a very interesting mind wrestling with things that are of common concern. Way that one is not when one is dealing with somebody who is just fundamentally other, and other also in a way that one can claim to diagnose.
So it's very hard to read Frost after reading your book the same way. It reads differently now.
Thank you.
And I assume it changes the way you look at him and the way you read him.
Absolutely. My hope is that I've been able to put Frost's contributions to the much wider body of literature, kind of, one constellation in a bigger galaxy, and kind of show how the galaxy relates to at least some of the rest. It's Frost would say, by a world of doubt surrounded, it's not, can't fill in the entire map, but my hope is that it gives some sense of what the light is that we're looking at.
It's a beautiful way of putting it. The name of the book is Love and Need, The Life of Robert Frost's Poetry. The book is published by FSG. Adam Plunkett, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on the book, and it's been a delight to speak to you.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Again, the name of the book is Love and Need, The Life of Robert Frost's Poetry. It is published by FSG. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.